Hot off the press from Maybelline, New York, it's new Lifter Plump, an intense plumping lip gloss formulated with chili pepper to deliver a heated sensation for an instant plumping effect that lasts. From 8 sizzling shades like Blush Blaze, Red Flag, Hot Honey, Coco Zing, and more. An extra-large wand applicator transforms lips in one swipe. Learn more at Maybelline.com. For a limited time, get 10% off your Lifter Plump purchase on Amazon with code 10PLUMP.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Otherwise, no, I don't really edit it. Like, okay. We're raw in these streets. Okay. You know what I mean? I'll pump you up a little more since you're soft-spoke. And
Yo. Is that good?
Yeah, you should be good.
Should I go up a little bit more?
No, you're good, man. You're good. Okay. So 12 years in your place.
Going on 12 years, I think. June 2009.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, because I think when I first, like, really settled in L.A., your place was like, it wasn't like done, but it was pretty done. Like, you had it looking awesome. Is it still basically the same setup?
It's the same setup. Yeah, completely the same setup. I'm thinking about redoing my patio a little bit. You know how your style changes, especially in 12 years?
Well, that's why I was asking.
Yeah, but it's so simple anyway. It was very simple, so I haven't had to change too much. I am thinking about changing, like, the front part of my kitchen cabinets, which would give it a whole new look. Thinking about going, it's red and, like, the white glass.
Yeah.
Thinking about going matte black. Mm. So it's, like, the matte black with the light original wood flooring.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the place is just, like, gray and white. I'm thinking about getting rid of the red for a little bit.
So to introduce Lindsay to you a little bit here. I call her Berg. I mean, some people call her Lindsay. I don't think I've ever called you Lindsay.
There's not a lot of people that call me Lindsay.
Okay. I'm a Berg. I'm on Team Berg.
Which I'm good. I actually don't really love Lindsay. I love my parents, but I really don't understand why they named me Lindsay.
It's like it's too square a name for you or something?
Yeah, I mean, didn't they know I was going to come out like this and be absolutely absurdly nuts?
So Lindsay's just too basic?
As my mom calls, right? Did she, like, feel that in her soul that I'm getting mad at her?
She heard you talk as
well. I really prefer my middle name, to be honest, which is Napela, and it's a Hawaiian family name, and it just means a sacred and great place of rest. And I just feel like it's a little more me, so that's my name now after volleyball. But Berg, for sure, during volleyball, most people called me by my last name.
That's a sports thing. But also,
is that a sports thing?
Yeah, it's a sports thing. Yeah, someone told me once that I'm the only person, like, that they ever played with where people don't call me by my last name. Yeah. They're like, we call everyone by their last name, we just call you Rod. I'm like, yeah, because I'm a different dude, y'all.
Right.
Different dude.
Right.
Get out of here.
But to introduce Lindsay to you a little bit, Chris.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you guys know?
Part of the reason why I wanted her on this show, and she got right into it, is that she is a fashion and design icon.
Okay.
So Lindsay's
about to tune in.
Lindsay is the second. There's this guy named Colin Brickley who used to be a brand manager at Pony. I saw his loft in maybe 2007. And then I saw Lindsay's loft in 2010. And both of them, different styles, but had a huge impact on how I saw design and how I saw that a place could really come together. Especially Lindsay. Like, Colin's was more like, it was more basic. It was more like, it was very San Diego. And Lindsay's was like taking chances in ways and added like personal touches. Like, Lindsay has things in her place that you won't see anywhere else. Yeah. She has shit made just for her shit that sets it apart. Yeah. So in that way, again, I think that she's an art icon that also is a three-time Olympian, three-time medalist.
Two-time medalist.
Like,
yeah.
She got hardware though, yo. So I'm just saying. She's a different cat.
Just a different breed. I looked you up, Lindsay. I'm not going to lie. I would call you the Drew Brees of volleyball. People be hating on you because you're undersized, but you're like, nah, hold my work.
Yeah. there's a lot of hate, but it's okay. I think it definitely helped me be and make me the person that I am and make me work harder and make me understand that I don't want to hate on people like I was hated on in general. And I wouldn't have it any other way, to be honest, but I definitely had to struggle to prove to people, at least in the volleyball world, that I was good enough and I deserved to be there. And so I actually enjoy that part about me, but it definitely, when you look back and going through it, it was tough.
Yeah.
But fortunately, I had a great support system. My family is absolutely the bomb, and I couldn't have done it without them. But yeah, don't Google me. I hate the Google. As much as I love, I'm calling it the Google. I hate the Google. You can't control what pictures are on there, and I actually don't think it really represents me well, because, like Rod said, you know, I'm different with the style, with the whatever it is. And I don't think during my volleyball career, we didn't really have Instagram until the end of it. We didn't have a place where I could really show myself unless you met me.
Right.
And so, Google, it is what it is.
I mean, it's not Hot Ones or like Nardwar over here. I'm not trying to surprise you with any facts. I just, I just wanted to come in, you know, with a, I didn't want to come in blind.
Know who you're dealing with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be.
I feel like when you were playing, you weren't like using social media like that. I feel like you kept your best parts to yourself also, like to the people close to you.
Yeah. I feel like I didn't know how I could do it, to be honest. I feel like Instagram came about or close to my last Olympics, which was close to the end of my career. So I didn't really know before that, other than Twitter, which I'm not really like a writing person that much. That was like the only thing I really knew about. So maybe I was late on it because I wasn't the techie type person, but I really did get into Instagram because I felt like it could show the artistic side of me. I often, now I'm more visible on my Instagram, but before it would be like pictures of just that picture, you know, behind you, or of art, or of architecture, or of fashion, those things, and I wasn't really in it. But now I've been told that I need to be in it, which is a struggle. I prefer to be behind the mic.
Behind the scenes.
Behind the camera.
That speaks to, Lindsay is also, Berg is also probably the first person I would call like a friend that's also a boss.
Yeah.
Like when I was younger, there were very few people I knew that I would describe as a boss in general, but especially like a female boss who like ran her own shit, had her own money. Like, and I don't mean like that in some like pejorative way that's like, oh, women couldn't do that, but just at that age, I didn't see it. And Lindsay came with this like boss ass swag. So when she says behind the scenes like that, I'm picturing it like, yeah, she's making moves that people don't even realize she's making until they're made.
Yeah. Also, I feel like some people just have that persona where it's, I want my work to lead first. You know, that's the Drew Brees thing. It's like, I don't need to be all up in it. I got told the same thing, advice from a friend who's like, yeah, but it's Instagram. People follow you to see you, dude. Like, right. I get it. But I was like, yeah, but I'm just trying to show pictures, right? And I like taking pictures. So shouldn't I just be showing the pictures? Like, what the fuck? What am I supposed to be in it?
Right. To be honest, what a lot of volleyball, that part taught me was, if I could make people around me better, I was going to stay on the court. Whether I was undersized, whether I was not fast, didn't jump high, if my team won because I was making people around me better and making the team better, the coach was not going to take me off the court. And I'm like, all right, that's how I'm staying on the court.
Right.
Because I wanted to be on the court. So I feel that the same way that I took that also to real life once I was finished. And I think I have a decent network, or I know a lot of people. So if someone is talking about something that they need to happen or they want to do this and that, my mind immediately works like, who do I know and how can I help my friend?
Yeah.
Or how can I do this? So I'm really thankful that I figured that out in volleyball of how to help and make people better. So at the end of the day, I could also succeed.
Yeah.
So I think that now in my life, I think just a different way. If someone's talking to me, my mind is like already working on how can I help them or what can we do together and just try to collaborate. So my brand just in general, I call myself Napella X. I don't really call myself that, but if I'm collaborating with a brand or something non-volleyball wise, I'd say Napella is kind of my non-volleyball situation. The X to me means collaboration. I don't think people can do it alone. I think everything is better when people are working together and collaborating on something. I don't think there's competition out there. I think there's room for everybody to win, whether I'm a part owner of a gym, and I don't feel like the other gyms are competition for us because there's so many people that need to go to the gym.
Yeah.
We're just like a different gym.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the volleyball to the now real world life, which I've been retired for a while now.
Yeah, can you just...
feels like yesterday.
Just to give people some background, can you just like take us through your volleyball journey?
Okay.
Because I know we're going to get some people in here that are like, you're like literally shooting a volleyball Instagram story. You've taken over for today. There are going to be some volleyball people that are going to listen to this. They might be interested in hearing kind of your volleyball past. And then we'll get to the art stuff a bit later.
Yeah, so volleyball past, fortunate enough to be born and raised in Honolulu, Hawaii. I say that because, you know, we don't really have a choice where we're born.
Yeah.
And I'm
like, tell
me about
it.
I'm like, damn, like I got chosen to be born on an island. So I really don't take that for granted. I'm so fortunate. Grew up in Honolulu, Hawaii. It is a huge volleyball state. I joke about it, but it's true that at one point in time, I feel like more fans went to women's volleyball games than football games at the University of Hawaii. It's just a huge sport. My dad's a volleyball player. My mom was a tennis player. I just played since I was 7, 8. Loved the sport. It was really good just because I loved it and wanted to play. Got recruited, the normal recruiting.
But did you play for like a AAU team and do all that stuff?
Yeah, so it's the same thing with volleyball as in basketball. We actually do have an AAU and we have like a USA volleyball tournament. They're kind of two separate entities. Played in that. Our name was A6 Rainbows. We were the A6 Rainbow Volleyball Club.
That sounds very Hawaii.
We walked around in Hawaiian print shorts until they made us wear spandex. Then we had our, you know, pareo wraps around us walking around the tournaments to cover our butts because we're like, we're not about to wear these like little ass spandex.
I've always thought that was wild. Even when I was in high school,
I've never thought Instagram, it was insane,
as a 14-year-old in high school, I'm like, wow, there's just like ass here. Bro, I don't know how to handle this.
Bro, my sisters play volleyball, and even as a little kid, I was like, this feels wrong. And then being a tall person, who they want to hook you up with first, volleyball players. You date a volleyball player, you go to a game, you go,
ain't nothing wrong
with
that.
There's a lot of dads in here at this game, and what's going on, bro?
Yeah. For sure. We were definitely, I think, the last state to start wearing those. Just in Hawaii, I mean, not now. I see girls, 14-year-olds in thongs when I go home to the beach. I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah.
But I think that is just where our world has come, I guess.
Yeah,
the Instagram influence. Crazy.
But before, we're wearing baggy surf shorts. We all surfed. We're just very modest. And so I think it was my senior year in high school, we had to wear them in high school as well and club, and I was like, whoa, what is this? And like pulling them down when now girls are pulling them up, and I was like, whoa. There are a couple of schools that were still wearing, we call them buns, that were like bikini bottoms. So Long Beach State was still wearing bikini bottoms, so I was like, I'm not going to Long Beach State. Like, that wasn't even an option. I was like, I'm not about to play in a bikini bottom. My body
wild.
Is not bomb, all right? No.
Well, I'm body positive, first of all. Second of all, don't act like Berg acting like she ain't had hoes in her life. You
Come
know
on.
What I mean? Like,
exactly.
Get out of here.
Get out of here
with that nonsense.
The humble brag. Oh, done. No. Oh, I was flexing on these hoes.
All right. So then I say randomly because I decided to go to University of Minnesota, the coldest place in the world. Maybe.
What was that decision based on?
That decision was I pretty much threw in the towel, to be honest. It's nothing. I got really frustrated with the recruiting process. Teams, some were still worried about my height and my body structure, I guess I'd say. They're worried I was a little too overweight, slow, short, whatever, this and that. So some teams, they were interested, but then they're like, oh, we're going to take this other girl. Then schools that I wanted to go to, and they're like, okay, you have to come on this visit this weekend. And I'm like, my high school team, we got a game. I'm not about to leave my team because...
Wait, so they were trying to make you, like, they try to force you into a weekend? Like, yeah. It was like a probably like an all sports yeah. weekend or something?
Yes.
Got you.
And it's a 5.5 hour flight.
Yeah.
It is not a drive for, like, everyone else. It's not a 2 hour flight. Like, this is a weekend. And I just didn't want to leave my team, which goes back to I'm always about my team and want to win. So then those, and then I was like, I'm not going to go to your school without going on campus.
Yeah.
So just things were like crossing off. I wanted to go to Stanford. They had two setters that were like right in front of me already there. So my parents were great. You know, they saved up. They're like, you can walk on somewhere, Lindsay, if you want to walk on. Don't let your pride with the scholarship thing. Like, if you want to go to Stanford because you want to go to Stanford, we will figure it out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I was like, no, I am not making my parents pay for school when I'm fortunate enough to have these offers now. Right. I was like, yeah. this isn't an option.
Yeah.
So my dad asked me to take a trip to Minnesota. The backstory of that is my dad played with the coach at Santa Barbara, UCSB. Yep. His name's Mike Hebert. He actually passed away last year. Great coach, grew the program at University of Illinois. They went to a Final Four. Minnesota was starting to build their program, bought him from Illinois. And I went and visited. And it was in the fall. It wasn't cold yet. I was like, can I get into business school? They're like, yep. And then the girls were nice. There was a girl from California. She's like, if I can do it, you can do it. Let's build this. And
that's that feels like love and basketball. Like,
right.
Girl, like, come on.
Girl, we got to. But no, that was everybody from a warm place at Michigan. They were always like, this winter is ridiculous. I can't go home because it's too far. And I was like, yeah, I don't know what to tell you, bro. Like, it's cold.
The trees glittering yeah, I was everywhere. Like, what's going on?
I was like, must be nice. You get nice weather year-round, bro. Welcome to hell, bro. Negative 35 degrees, baby.
Right. And that's what happened later on. So I was like, cool. And I did it. And really, it was just like that. Not that excited. This is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And I was okay with it, to be honest, because I wanted to be a part of something. And this something was something that was going to grow. And I was going to build a program instead of, say, going to UCLA, going to Stanford. I might sit the bench for 2 years. I might even be better than that person in front of me. But if they're winning and it's a senior or junior setter, they're going to play the senior or junior setter if they're still winning.
Yep.
It just is what it is. So I chose another route where I knew I could beat out that setter that was there. She was a senior, but they just weren't a great program yet.
Yeah.
I knew that would happen, and I was going to be a part of something special. And now they're in, like, every other Final Four, and I feel like I built that program with a couple other players and that coach. And to me, that's something pretty damn special.
Yeah.
So I almost transferred my first year after my first
that
year
cold got to
I
you.
Was very very cold. We were shitty. I was like, I'm not gonna play for a shitty team. I went all this way. I was pissed. My dad's making calls to college coaches, writing emails. Dad's all about it. But I stayed, and I don't think I'd be the person I am if I did not stay. Minnesota is an incredible state. The Midwest is incredible. The people were so supportive. I loved going to the Big Ten school. I loved the support of that. And it made me figure out how to be okay when I was so uncomfortable.
Is that, besides the uncomfortability of being away, was there a competitive aspect to you wanting to transfer also? Because when I almost transferred too from Cal after during my sophomore year, I realized that I was like still at the bottom of the depth chart, even though I thought I should have moved up somehow. I didn't. I called my mom. I'm like, I'm going to leave and I'm going to go to either San Diego State or Pepperdine. I don't know. I'm going to work it out. And she's like, yeah, no, you're not. And I'm like, no, yeah, this is the plan. She's like, you're too young to have a plan. You're not giving up on a Berkeley degree, you idiot.
You're too young.
And then when I stayed, it literally, and Chris and I have talked about this, I had to literally transform myself into a completely different person to like become that competitive, like almost like an asshole in some ways, but in another way, like just overcorrection of being such a nice person to becoming like where I could turn off and on. And then that, if I had transferred, that would have never happened. I would have just struggled at the next place too, probably. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if that was something that you went through at all.
So I wanted to transfer being competitive wise because we didn't even make the tourney. We were at the selection show in our lounge area watching and being that bubble team. Mm. So we're all going to find out together if we made it or not because we were that far on the bubble, like that bubble. And so that was shitty. Not making the tournament, I was like, I'm better than this. Like in my own like confidence, like I am better than this. We are not going to the tourney.
Yeah.
Like this is whack. And I understood why we weren't going. I mean, I came into a team that wasn't all of my coach's team. He had come in a year before I had come in. So he's dealing with those people. I'm not saying those people, but ones he did not recruit. And then he's got the ones that he recruited. So I'm like, am I going to change my attitude right now and buy into this process and into this journey? And so that was where my attitude changed and where my I decided not to transfer. Was I going to be selfish and transfer? And like you said, maybe it's going to be the same thing. Who knows if the next place is going to be better for me? Who knows if I'm going to play all of this? Yeah. Instead, I chose to change my attitude there and see what I could do there. So, yeah.
Going to Michigan, the time I went to, you have a unique point of view of seeing the direct negative side effect of that, of like not sticking in. Went through three coaches in 3 years because everybody's like, oh, it didn't work. All right, let's switch it out. And then you realize it's like, no, you can't. It has to have gestation time, you know? Like you have to hit the roadblock and then try to push through it that a little more to like make that game changer.
So something that's going on right now, though, is kids are transferring.
The transfer portal is crazy. Open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is crazy. And my sister's a head volleyball coach, and it's just like crazy. Nobody pushes through anymore.
That's a good point. I have advocated for years that college players deserve more autonomy because it's basically a system that takes advantage of them. But I think it is also important to remember that we, even though they're past the age of 18, these are children. I was a child.
Right.
Probably until I was like 23, honestly, like a child. And for me to feel like I have agency means that I was ready to give up.
Right.
And I think there's a difference between being in a bad situation and giving up on something before it's matured. And I don't know why everyone's choosing to transfer, but I know that if that's the reason, you're doing yourself a disservice.
Right. I think a lot of it is they expect to go in and play, and some aren't playing right away.
Right.
And they don't want to be on the bench. They don't know how long they're going to be on the bench.
So here's the question then, because this is why I thought they deserve more autonomy in the first place. When I was recruited, like I didn't just transfer for no goddamn reason. I was recruited and I was told, this who's in front of you, this will be your time. Right? And I feel like what needed to change first, what still needs to change, is how college coaches recruit in the first place. Don't come into my house and sell me a lie. Come into my house and be like, hey, this is the situation. You'll make it if you do these things.
Right.
No one told me that. They said, hey, this is the guy ahead of you. This is the guy. This is what the situation is. You're probably going to get this amount of time, etc. Because that's what they think they need to do. They need to lie to kids.
Right.
And then when kids have the opportunity to make their own decision back, they're like, fuck you.
Right.
You know, like, and I get that. This whole, if this is a two-sided thing, because if coaches want to change how the transfer portal works, start from the beginning by being honest and stop trying to manipulate children to fit your agenda also.
Right.
Making a job interview, don't sell them a bale of goods, man.
Just
keep it funky.
I mean, it got really bad for volleyball, and I mean, I obviously think it's worse for football and basketball because I definitely know there are other things involved and there's money involved depending on the level and the college. But even for volleyball, there are kids committing, verbally committing as freshmen in high school. A freshman in high school, I think I was 13 because I was a youngin. I graduated at 17. That would mean I was 13? You're deciding what you want to do for crazy. 4 years in that's going to be in advance. 4 years?
Yeah. You've lived it's a crazy third of move. Your life is it's remaining that's before you make so this decision.
That's
so insane.
So when I started finding this out, because I didn't commit till the end of my junior year, I believe, like when you could, and it wasn't like a verbal commit, it was when I could sign.
The letter
you know
of
what
intent,
I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, something's got to change here. This is awful. Like, either the parents are making the decision for them, or they're scared because the coach said this and that to them, and they're scared to say no. You know what I mean? I'm like, well, something is wrong here.
One big difference between... So I don't know how it works in football. I know it's like there's a lot of BS in every side, but I would say basketball and volleyball have a lot of overlap in terms of the process to get a scholarship, which is you got to play all these tournaments in the summer. Mm-hmm. You go into a gym, there's like 80 fucking games going on, especially volleyball. It's like... Because volleyball players make a lot of noise when they play, too. There's always cheering, so you walk into like some... convention center, and it's just like, like every direction.
It's crazy.
And but the difference is basketball, AAU has a lot of money behind it, so kids aren't necessarily paying to play AAU.
Yeah.
In kids, volleyball, that paying. Shit is a bill.
Yeah.
And yeah, I could see easily a parent getting, like, they've invested almost as much as the scholarship would be at this point to play travel volleyball from age 10 to age 18. They want that return on investment.
Exactly.
That's a big part of the reason they do it, I assume.
And even the last 10 years, which I just found out from my sister because she's involved, there's clubs, and this is why I don't have a club, don't work for a club, don't necessarily want to be associated. I would love to consult for all the clubs and give all the knowledge I can just as an ex-player, you know what I mean? But they're promising to get the kid to play at the clubs. They're promising that they have these relationships with the coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And there's not, I'm not saying there's like money under the table involved, this and that, but they have relationships. So they're saying, hey, if you play here and you're on, say, the 16-1 team or this and that, you're definitely going to have these coaches watching you because we know these coaches well, or this and that.
Right.
And that definitely wasn't happening 25 years ago when I was playing. But my sister's like, yeah, some of the executives sell it like that because they might know me, or they might know Kevin at Stanford, or they might know whoever at Nebraska, this and that. Yeah. So yes, the parents are like, you better get a scholarship. Yeah.
That was only like that for basketball with me. There were some AU clubs where it's like, you know, you have a coach, this is across all sports, where it's like, you don't know what you're talking about, but like they would sell, oh, I have a buddy who's like a Cal, and da da da. You know what I mean? So you go play. With football, it's more so you have to go to the school's thing. So the school is going to see you. In order for you to like get seen, you're going to camp, the sports camps. So it's like,
right.
Yeah.
Like it's not the same.
That's the same way, though, actually, for volleyball. You have a better chance if you go to their camp as well. But they already know who they're watching. My sister's like, right now, because everyone's talking about, oh, the recruiting, the quarantine, they've canceled all the tournaments, this and that, and all these kids are worried about being seen. My sister's like, we already know who we're recruiting.
Yeah.
Like, they're sophomores. She's like, there's no diamond in the roughs coming out anymore. Everything's online.
Yeah.
There's all these highlight videos. Like, it's not like there's a diamond in the rough anymore when there used to be.
I was a diamond in the rough.
And yes, but how long ago was this?
This was 2002, obviously. So but I'm saying, like, I was a diamond in the rough because I played volleyball varsity, and I didn't play basketball varsity. So right. I did one summer of AAU basketball instead of travel volleyball. And I came into my senior year with scholarship offers. I wasn't even supposed to be on the basketball team.
Yeah.
And so I wonder how that would play today. Like, it probably just wouldn't have ended up. If it was this summer, there's no way I would end up playing basketball.
Exactly. So it probably wouldn't happen too often anymore. But interesting enough, I did a panel last night, and I was interviewing 3/4 of the national team members right now. And I've been doing them for the last 5 weeks. And randomly, I put these four together. Not randomly, but I didn't know that all of these four, three of them almost went on basketball scholarships and not volleyball scholarships, three. So my other 4 weeks, those girls started playing when they were 8, 9, 10. And then I ended up having this group that played, two of them played basketball more than one of their friends was like, oh, just come play for our volleyball team. And then that happened. Then the other one was kind of like the same up until here. So it was crazy. I was like, these four really started late and could have gotten basketball scholarships and thought they liked basketball more until they stepped on a volleyball court and then were like, damn, I really like this.
Yeah.
And now one is going for her third Olympics, one's going for her second Olympics, the other two are going for their first Olympics, and as 18-year-olds, they would have had no clue this would be their life right now.
I think that I was the last era of them figuring out, like you said, getting it all on the computer and getting everybody having highlights. Like, I was there when they were just doing the highlights. And I also was the same thing. I didn't play football. I was too big to play it as a little kid. They tried to make me play, but I was overweight all the time. And then I really started playing football for 3 years. It was junior year of high school and that. And we didn't have film setups. But now there is no kid that I've ever seen that is talked about on Max Preps or any of the things that you're going to see on websites that everybody doesn't have every game that they've ever played. And right. It's like,
but you mentioned something, Lindsay, that I'd love to talk about, which is the national team. You're at Minnesota. I assume you guys start winning games. When did you become, I don't know if this is true, but I've told people for years that you were the number one setter in the world for a long time. In volleyball and sports like that, they rank shit like that. Like, yeah. In basketball, like, they, like, oh, no, best basketball player. But everyone's in the NBA, so it's different. Yeah. When people are spread around the world, they're like, oh, who's the best, like, soccer player? Yeah, like, who's soccer, the best volleyball player? And so when did you go from being, like, someone ready to transfer at Minnesota to being Lindsay Berg, the setter of the national team?
Yeah, so interesting story.
Great. That's why
life is interesting. I graduated early from college, just early as in early as in I finished right after season, so we're fall. I graduated in 3.5 years. I was good at school, but I didn't love it. Okay. So I was like, like the last two summers, they kind of tried to keep us there. They can't keep you there. Yeah. But all the team was like, yeah, let's do summer school. Let's stay there. You know what I mean?
Right.
And my parents actually had left Hawaii and moved to Santa Barbara. And so that sucked. So going home to Hawaii wasn't going home anymore. I mean, I'd still go, but we weren't in my house. We weren't those types of things. So anyways, did the summer school thing, was able to graduate early, and they ended up having a professional league for 1 year that year. So they had already drafted the teams, and there's only four teams in the league. It's called the USPV. And one of the teams happened to be in Minnesota, because Minnesota became a really big volleyball hub. So because I just graduated there, I was like hometown hero without being from Minnesota. But they took me as well. They already had two setters. So normally on a team, in my position as a setter, you only have two on a team. So they already had two real good ones from the Big Ten, one from Illinois, and the other one, from Notre Dame, not Big Ten.
Was the Libros around at that point, or was that later? Okay.
So they were around in the pro. I never played with a libero in college.
Got it.
Also, 3 out of my 4 years played point scoring, as in not rally scoring. Yeah. So we had games.
Chris, real quick, libero is a defensive specialist that doesn't require a substitution to come in.
Okay.
And they usually come in the back row. It's usually the smallest player on the team who makes like the most passes.
Where's
is that
the
one with the different color jersey?
Yeah, the other shirt.
So I recently had a friend continue to call that person the other shirt. And listen to this real quick. And so I was coaching last year. Oh, this is going to be bad, because now I'm going to call someone out.
We hear now. You got to keep driving.
So we were playing against a team, and the other side's other shirt was fucking up. And so my friend doesn't know it that great, but he was like, damn, she gets to wear another shirt. That means she should be balling. Like, she's special with the other shirt. And so I'm just dying. I'm like, this is great. I'm calling libero the other shirt for the rest of my life. And he's like, isn't she supposed to be special? She gets to wear that other shirt. Yeah. And she was crappy. So anyways, I thought that was just a little funny while we explain who the libero is.
I feel my man's, because that's literally always been my thought process. I was like, should I like the captain? Is that, right. I mean, is that the armband? I was like, is that like,
no, it's
is
just
that
the other shirt. Sometimes it's not good. So I never played with another shirt.
Okay.
And then we would have 3-hour games in college because it wasn't rally scoring yet. And we did a Friday-Saturday situation. Yeah. So we'd start a game at 7 p.m. and play a 3-hour game and have to turn around and play another Big Ten the next day. Like, my body was banged up. Yeah. Okay, so back to the USPV. I get told or asked, you want to play with this team? I'm like, sure. I'm like, I am not sitting on the bench. So I get there late. They've already been there, I think, all through December. They let me go home for Christmas. I come back maybe right before New Year or something. It's short season. It's about to be 3 months since I get there. And I'm like, I'm beating out these bitches. So I work my way and beat them out. We win when we're not supposed to win. Chicago was supposed to win. They stacked their team. The father of one of the players was the one that founded the league. And we go and beat them in Chicago and win the whole league.
He was sick. She got cussed out. He was mad.
And it just so happens that the assistant coach for the Minnesota Chill, we're called. I thought it was a good name.
That's pretty dope.
Yeah, not bad.
I'd love to wear a vintage Chill jersey. Right.
I might be able to find one for you. But they were the smallest, tightest things ever.
You definitely got to get one now. You definitely need
it's
one.
It's nuts how small that thing was. I would rip it now, probably. So the assistant coach, who, by the way, should not have been the assistant coach of that team. He should have been the head coach, but that's a whole nother story.
Politics.
Right. He was assistant coach for the national team, and he told the head coach at that time, who was Toshi Yoshida, that he needed to give me a tryout for the national team. So my whole Olympic national team career, I owe it to Kevin Hambley, who is now the head coach at Stanford. Okay. He's on my grandmother's will. We all laugh about it. I'm just joking.
I was about to say, I was like, oh, whoa.
I wouldn't be surprised, to tell you the truth. But Kevin was single-handedly, other than me performing, single-handedly gave me that shot. And so I drove. They told me you get a 2-week tryout. You have to pay to get there. Yeah. If you make it past the 2 weeks, we will reimburse you for gas or your flight, whichever one you did.
Yeah.
So my dad and I drove out there 2002. January of 2002 was my show up date. It's like this training period when all the vet pros are overseas playing. And it's like the newbies, whether you just finished college or you left college to come try out for the team, get to come between January and like March, April.
Yeah.
So that's how I got there.
Okay.
And then I had to just beat people out.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people in that line of setters, but that was how I got there, which is not really a normal how you get there. Normally you're an All-American.
Yeah, you're like in the pipeline the whole time.
Normally you're in the pipeline, or normally you're an All-American and you get invited. Like, I got invited, but you getting invited before that.
Yeah.
Right.
But I wasn't an All-American.
Question. What is the volleyball equivalent of, like, dunking on somebody or, like, crossing somebody up?
Hitting someone in the face.
I was wondering. Is it, like, do you hit them in the face and then get the point? Is that the equivalent of, like, I dunked on you and, like, get out of my
face?
Yeah,
that. So, I'm not a hitter, but it could either be you hit someone in the face, which doesn't happen that often because
you know,
people get good at this. Yeah. To get hit in the face, that's why everyone's always like, whoa, because it just doesn't happen that often. Yeah. But I would say getting dunked on is also like a hitter hitting over the block, which doesn't happen often unless it's a 6'7" girl hitting over me. That can happen.
So what's your equivalent? What's crossing somebody over then?
For me,
juke
crossing
in the middle, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, I know volleyball. I'm excited.
So, as a setter, you don't get those huge moments. You don't get these huge moments of like smashing a ball on someone or that thing. So, the setter's game is all playing with the blockers on the other side. So, my goal is always to get my hitters. Zero blockers up is special. Uh-huh. So I always want to get my hitters one blocker up instead of two blockers. So that means that I am teasing and juking the middle blocker to get just one blocker up on the pins.
Okay.
Or the pin blockers are scared to help with the middle because my pin hitters are really good. So then the middle just has one blocker up.
Okay.
So, but I got really good at getting zero blockers up. So that's my crossover, whatever you
want to
say in basketball.
Yeah, I mean, for the setter to do that, especially like being a short, like taller setters, some of the reasons why they are seen as more prototypical is because A, blocking, but B, you know, they can dump easier and stuff like that. But so the jump set, right, is like, it becomes really confusing to block. Like, I hated playing middle. Like, I ended up playing right side.
Middle is
so I didn't have to
the
move.
Hardest.
It sucks because you're like, The ball's coming in, and there's three directions you can go, and this motherfucker is in control of where that shit goes.
Yeah.
And, like, a lot of it's a guessing game. Sometimes you, like, the best middles actually are, like, quick enough to, like, recover or figure shit out, but I never got there. Never close.
At the end of the day, it's all about vision and trying to read the setter. As you get to the higher levels, you're also scouting. Okay. So people scouted what my tendencies were.
Yeah.
So, but I would also scout my own tendencies and try to not always do my tendencies.
Yeah.
So that's when you're getting to the higher level. But I got really good at vision of like, so here's the net. I'm about to set and I can see you right now. It doesn't look like I'm looking at you, but I can see you. So the middle blocker, which you are, you would take one step the other way or kind of look like you're leaning and I try to go the other way.
Okay.
Or if I'm jumping, I try to wait, which means you're going to end up jumping with the middle if I wait long enough and then I set somewhere else.
Okay. So you're more like a quarterback than a soccer player, because
she would call all the, like, there's plays in volleyball too, right? And it's like the higher you get, the more crazy these plays and combinations get. And you can't do any of them without a setter that can run them. You have to be able to not only hit all the sets, but really have the confidence to call them out and then outthink the defense.
Yeah.
Like, she has to notice, like she said, the tendencies of like, oh, they're doing this. Like, we're going to run boom, boom, boom. And then, yeah, if you're getting zero blocks up, that means she completely outthought the entire other side.
But here's the crazy thing. This one play that I continued to get zero blocks on, I did it the first play almost of every set. And it's not my fault nobody wanted to catch on.
They overthought it. They were like, there's no way she's going to do it again.
Exactly. So I'd send my middle on a three, which is like a little further from me. Pretend I'm setting the three and I'd go right over. And we were setting pretty fast. And so we'd get to Destiny Hooker would have zero up the first game of every play. It was the craziest thing. I was like, when is somebody going to catch on? Like, I just continue to laugh because I'm like, you guys, I do this every play because you guys are not catching on.
Hey,
I mean, if you've ever played Madden against somebody, you realize people don't catch on. I'm like, bro, I'm throwing a screen to the flat every time.
Same route.
People don't do that. All right, I want to transition a bit.
All right.
Like I mentioned at the top, a fashion and design icon in my eyes.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
That is how you were described.
When you
follow me around all the time, talk to everybody, and you know.
I don't have to follow you around because every single person who knows you knows this. I actually don't think there's one person who knows you who's like, oh, Lindsay, she's just square like the rest of them. Like, absolutely not.
I don't think they'd say that, but there might be people that don't agree with my fashion or my style. You know, everyone's got their own thing.
Yeah, if, like, here's the thing. You know why nobody really disagrees with Banana Republic? Because it's fucking vanilla. It's tones of gray and tan.
I disagree with Banana Republic.
But that's what I'm saying.
J. Crew?
If you take chances, like, to be really an artist in anything, in my opinion, you're obviously building off of other art, but you're also taking chances that make it your own. So most of what you, in my opinion, if you're a trendsetter, most people should disagree with what you're doing.
Right.
Most of the stuff I wear, people are like, couldn't pull that off,
it
man.
It happens
like,
all the time.
This shit that. Goofy, bro. What is this fucking outfit? You just like to look like everybody else, bro.
You just don't. Yeah. And I feel like you are one of the first people I saw really do that in a way that made every single choice your own.
Yeah, I look like an M&M, a blue M&M today. Nobody can see this, but I am in a full.
But it's got subtlety to it. Like, yeah. What's right here? What does that say?
So, I found this brand actually on Instagram, to be honest, and it's a sustainable brand, and they make all their stuff. It's recycled, and they're from the UK. And to be honest, I don't want to butcher the name, so I'm not going to say the name, but we can talk about it later. But it's organic cotton, and then they always have a reason. So they just drop like four colors of t-shirts, and it was with an organization to save the bees. So it was like a yellow, a white, a black, and it's really cool, and it just sells out.
Yeah.
And they do little collaborations, and it's all just sweat pieces. They're shorts, they're long shorts, they're sweatshirts, and then there's pants. Then they got like little crops, but it's like so simple, but they have a mission, and they're sticking to their mission. And I believe in brands and love small businesses or missions or those types of things. So that's what this is.
Have you ever had your own line or considered having one?
I've considered it many times. So the first time I considered it is before kimonos took off.
Hold up. Kimonos have always been hot, particularly for the boy. Got three of them.
Yeah, but I was
not like in the mainstream.
Yeah,
at
but
all.
Not in the mainstream. So I was.
No, I'm saying you're correct.
So
give it a little. I love
before
kimonos.
It went mainstream. I'm gonna say about 2017. It went mainstream. Why I know this is because in 2016, I coached at University of Hawaii for a season as a favor. I went back home, and I was bored out of my mind. That was the first time I lived back home as, like, an adult for that period of time. I was there for 6 months. And, sure, I was coaching the volleyball, and that was taking some time, but I was, like, creatively just like, whoa, what am I doing?
Was it just too slow? I have a theory that anybody – no matter where you're from, you can't expand yourself if you stay in that one place always. It's not accurate. I mean, my sister, you just have to go see other things in order to form different ways.
It's the goldfish. It's the big fish theory.
Yeah. I mean, I also think I would go back and live in Hawaii with a family because I love how I grew up and believe it's an amazing place. But I was single at the time and just doing volleyball, which, to be honest, because I'm very honest and blunt, volleyball doesn't stimulate me that much anymore.
Mm.
Yeah. It's
same.
It's easy.
Yeah. Ooh, not for that reason. God.
Played yourself. Played yourself.
Played yourself. Yeah,
don't jump.
No,
don't jump. Don't jump, player. Don't jump, player. We talk about Olympic medals here, homeboy. It's different.
The thought process and the problem solving, or so it's something I've done like my whole life, and I really get excited about things that are new or difficult, whether I always execute. Sometimes I do give up sometimes, but so that's when I thought about the kimono. I got all these kimonos from Japan. I was like, how can I make it a little more modern, that it's a little more wearable, like without the big sleeve, this and that. And I like had the pattern and I had this and was gonna do it. And then I was like, do I want to spend my money? Fashion's not cheap.
No.
You know, do I want to spend my money on this, or I had another option of spending my money on something else at that point in time. So I have these samples that I made for myself and I've worn them. And then 1 year later, everyone was coming out with
kimono.
And I was like, that's fine, because mine wasn't going to be like those.
Right.
But then I was like, That time has passed. I'm still wearing them. I wear robes out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I wear one today. I might bring it back out. I haven't done that in a while. So that was one time. And then the second time is actually right now. I'm thinking about it.
Collaboration.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. It's not...
crossover year.
Yeah. So it's interesting because part of it's me, but how I'd want to sell it is not really me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So
it makes total sense.
Yeah. So I'm wearing something right now for all the listeners. That's just like sweats. It's like quarantine sweats, but it's a little funky. But where I'm trying to go personally with my fashion is pretty chic and simple. Where I have 7 pieces that could all go together, that could be with sneakers or could be with a heel, could be day, could be night. Mm-hmm. A lot of women have trouble dressing, so maybe not in LA.
not Berg though.
No,
Berg ain't got no. Yo, she quit because it was easy.
She said a lot of y'all need some help. A lot of y'all need some help.
Some of y'all messy. No, Issa,
I'm not saying trouble.
Talk to him, Molly.
Issa, hit me up.
I'm not saying trouble dressing as in I think they look bad. I think people just have a hard time making decisions
and want it
just handed to them because that's not their thing. I enjoy being like, let me look in my closet right now, which a lot of clothes I obviously haven't worn. Let me see if I can put it together how I didn't wear it before, or something, this and that.
Right.
Everybody doesn't want to do that.
Some people just want to the uniform. They want the cartoon
and
closet.
If I can make a uniform that is super chic, or you can make it funky by putting your favorite sneakers on, or you can keep it really classy and chic, or you might be a volleyball coach that wants to look good on the sideline but has no idea how to dress, or a women basketball coach, that realm. So I'm saying that is where this could also be sold to, that type of where it might be five different colors you can choose from. Probably one of those five colors is part of one of your school colors. And here's seven pieces that you can wear for games that you're going to look bomb and good, because they're going to flatter you. They're going to fit you well. And so that's one side of it. And the other side is like, I kind of just want a uniform for myself as well. But
so that, like, so for me, everything I've ever done fashion wise that I've sold has just been something that I wanted for myself.
Right.
And then sometimes I got too ambitious with it. Like, okay, I'll buy 100 of these because everyone's going to want one. And people rarely do. But how much of this is what I'm asking. How much of the stuff that you do is, all right, I like this for myself and I can see this exporting, versus like, oh, this is just something that would sell. Because I think that at a certain point, I started learning that, like I did the Send Nudes brand. I didn't love it. I just knew people would like it at that time, which is why, like, it came and went.
Yeah.
Got a bunch of copycats. It wasn't something that had my heart in. But I had Boom, though, which is, like, something I really, at that time, was really my style.
Yeah.
And it was a much tougher road to export it to the masses. But it did start to get a lot of traction. Unfortunately, there wasn't good business practice with my partners and stuff like that, so... It's a million ways to die in the West, but there's two different stories about how it got started.
Yeah.
I'm wondering which one drives you most, and have you ever thought about, hey, this will just sell, so I'm just going
to
do it?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever thought about that, to be honest. I think everything I do, I have an attachment to, which can be a really bad thing as well. Mm. Can be a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah.
I think everything I do, I'm pretty passionate about. A lot of people recently... keep teasing me that I'm such a Cancer. So I'm born July 16th. And
oh, I didn't think gang, astrology gang. At all. I was like, man, you're not a Cancer.
No,
I know what she was talking about.
July
8th out here.
Everyone keeps telling me this, like, more and more. And I'm very passionate. Exactly. Everyone tells me about myself, let me tell you, because I'm not a huge, like, sign person. But a lot of it does make sense. I'm very attached and passionate of the things that I do or I'm a part of. And also, I feel strongly, or it hits me hard for some things that I'm not. It's like not even about me, but like I feel for the person, or I feel for what's going on. And so I don't know if I could ever be involved unless it was like a silent investment on something that I was like, oh, that's gonna sell. And it was like a silent investment, but my name wasn't on it, or it wasn't my creation. I think that's the only way I could be involved in something that was just out there to sell.
Yeah. I've always wondered that too, because I feel like this is all art, really, where there's a point when you go, okay, I do love this thing, but I also am trying to make some bread, right? So I know that there's going to be some things that I don't love that people are going to want, especially with writing. Like, a lot of people get real, oh, no, it has to be the best. I love it. And it's like, bro, are you trying to get a job? Like, do the changes so you can get the job and then make the thing you want.
Right.
You said it. Michael Caine said it best. He's like, it's going to be stuff that fulfills you, stuff that, that like, really pushes you and makes you grow as an artist. And then there's stuff where you got to pay your bills, man. Like,
yeah, I mean, as a painter, a fine artist, I have learned, I think I learned more doing Boom, though, than anything, like which things I knew that I would only attach to and which things would be for the masses. And I think that right now I do probably 80% of things that I know, like, this is the dopest thing I could do for me. And then there's other things where I'm like, all right, how can I tweak what I love to make it something that's more palatable, that's an instant sell? And I feel like there's a lot of, like, tact that goes into that. Just yesterday, I kind of like fumbled one in a hilarious way that will probably
white,
end up working
the
out.
The white on white?
Yeah. Well, what I was doing is it, like, not subconsciously, I made a choice that I did a black on black Killmonger, right? With all black colors. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's really dope. I want to do something white on white, but what, like, really embodies white on white that still, like, is, like, trendy and stuff like that. So I was doing Lana Del Rey lyrics, not knowing that, that Lana Del Rey has just blown up the internet like 30 hours ago, like with a lot of like anti-black sentiment.
The white.
And so when I was posting it, this dude sends me like ha 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 ha.
Like you might, are you joking and, right
no,
now?
No, I was like, bro, I was like, there's no way.
Clowning me. And then someone else is like, oh man, with the controversy and everything, good call. And I'm like, okay, wait, let me step back. What is happening?
You saw the tie.
I don't know what's happening. I was upset. I was like, why are you laughing at me? It turns
he
out,
said,
yeah.
Why I get so many ha-has on this one,
but
bro?
It turns out, like, what I was already doing was already looking like I'm trying to, like, tackle the controversy through right. art. And it's fascinating because that's not what I was doing. But as soon as I was, like, the painting's not finished.
Right.
So now it's like, I got caught at the perfect time where I can, like, pivot a bit on what it was going to be and make it now about that in a way that I think will be really satisfying. But it only ended up that way because I started from a point of, like, what would sell instead of what, like, I would truly do in that situation. You know what I mean? And that's, you're always going to run into that when that's the thing. If I just painted another black person, we'd be good unless it was, you know, Joe Biden made a comment about him or something. You know what
right.
I mean?
Well, I think I'm actually running into that right now. I'm doing this project, a digital platform that I've created. It's called the Cuore Project. Cuore means heart in Italian. Backstory to that, but it's trying to bring the young volleyball athletes, because volleyball is now the biggest sport numbers wise for young girls out there, yet they don't know who's on the Olympic team, and they never have. So it's bothered me during my career, and it's bothered me after my career, and I was like, I'm gonna figure this out. There are so many great women that have played volleyball, made the Olympic team, didn't make the Olympic team, whatever it was, that could be mentors, heroes, idols to all of these young girls, and they don't know who these women are. And it's not anybody's fault. They're just not visible enough. There's not a lot of mainstream media. USA Volleyball has a lot on their plate to be able to like highlight every person that goes through USA Volleyball, this and that. So that's what I started. And it's all of the women right now. There's about 30 of them trying to make the now 2021 Olympics. It was supposed to be 2020. And it highlights all of their stories. And hopefully through each of their stories and all these random questions, some can be really deep and some is like your skincare, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I want all these young girls to know the names of the women that make the team and that maybe also fall short. And all of these young girls know that is my favorite player because she dyes her hair purple and I can associate with her. That's my favorite player because she hits a crap out of the ball but doesn't say a lot on the court. Whatever it is, this has never happened in the sport of volleyball as it does with basketball, football. Even though they got their helmets on, people still know who Odell is. People still know who Larry Fitzgerald is, or, you know, all of these people.
Right.
And it's so sad to me because I think all the women are great. And so what I'm running into, because my vision is it's not about volleyball, it's just about the human and who these people are, is everyone's like, but you got to put highlights of them playing on your site and on your Instagram. And I'm like, no, it's not about them playing. It's about you feeling the connection of being just the person. And that they went through everything that these little girls are going through. They can relate to you. And so I'm running into what other people think my project should be and what it should be about than what my vision is.
Right.
Yeah.
So exactly what you guys are saying.
So what are you, how are you currently navigating that right now? Are you like feeling like, okay, the highlight thing makes sense, but I don't want it to be focused on that? Or are you like, no, fuck off, I'm going to push with this until it like lives or dies and make adjustments? Like, what is your thought process?
Yeah, I'm taking in all of the criticism I want to. Nothing has been, surprisingly, nothing has been like negative. There's just people that have been like, hey, this has worked for our club volleyball page, this meme or this and that. And I was like, I love what you're telling me. There's probably not ever going to be a meme on this page, but hey, I can put a video of Kelsey Robinson hitting a ball. So they now know Kelsey just had this interview. They know the face. Then now they're seeing Kelsey hit the ball.
Yeah.
Right.
Cool.
Right.
I can do that. So I'm taking it all in and then just trying to figure out how it still goes with the vibe of what I'm trying to do, because I'm trying to do something different. Mm-hmm. If it hasn't been done.
Yeah.
So I feel like I can do it and do it how I want to do it. So I'm kind of going you know, a little bit I'm looking at uninterrupted a little bit because of how they started. Mm-hmm. So I'm already starting a little high, I wouldn't say higher, a little more edited than the original Uninterrupted. You know, Uninterrupted was guys just talking about their life or something on their cell phones, sending it in. Then it was on Instagram or it was on whatever it was on. That's how they like started. And now it's they have kneading dough with Chase. They have the shop. They have all of these things, which I think could happen as well with my project, a podcast here and there, something about financial literacy for these kids, something about this and that. So I'm like looking at them and using that as a little bit of help. But where mine was a little different is I actually had like super edited content to start. I chose to go that route. But I might now bring some selfie videos, something that is a little less edited, you know what I mean? Right. And go almost the opposite way. So yeah, it's a struggle though. It's a struggle to get these little kids to press that follow button, let me tell you.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean.
I mean, if it's not making fun of somebody or something almost negative, it's like really hard. Like this is an uplifting, educational, inspirational, motivational platform, which all the parents are loving, all the coaches are loving, fans are loving, but the kids are like, womp, womp, womp.
I think that's why they wanted you to do the highlight thing to get that little quick, that little quick attention grab, because that's one of the hardest things about marketing now, right, is that the attention span is that of scrolling through Instagram. So, yeah, that is hard, because that is a great concept, because we're doing a similar thing about artists, and you want to show the art, but then the whole point of it is to highlight the person behind the art, right? But it's how do you do that without, you know what I mean?
It's like,
how
do you? Because people want the, people want the, you know, people want the apple pie. They don't necessarily care where the apples are sourced from. You know what I mean?
Exactly. So that's so crazy to me, and I get it that I might be different, but like, these stories, and like even last night we had four of the girls on, and just some of the things that they were saying, and you would have never known. One of them coached after college volleyball, took a break, went and played half a season in Puerto Rico. She's like, man, this pro thing isn't for me. Then went and coached at Illinois, finished her degree, women's volleyball. Then went and coached men's volleyball and won a national championship as a coach, a woman coach for UC Irvine.
That's
before
crazy.
She then decided, oh, let me go give this national team a chance. They invited her. I'm like, does anybody know like how dope this is?
Like, you
know,
how is that story not out?
Seems
like a story people would know.
I've put it out with my Quote project, but I wanted to ask her. I already knew it and asked it yesterday. I mean, there's some things that are like, damn, that right there just shows a young girl, hey, there's so many possibilities of things you can do. And it might take some time to figure out what that is you want to do. But go ahead and try this. Go ahead and try that. And it's okay. And then another girl was like, I hate to work out. Another, she's been to one Olympics, and she's going for her second. And she's like, I hate to work out.
Can relate.
Boy, you know what I mean?
But you listen to other stories about Olympians, and they're like, push through, work hard, team no sleep, but like all of this. And she was like, I just want you guys to know that it's okay to feel okay if you don't want to work out. I don't like to work out. I have to have my teammates help me work out.
Right.
So like all of these things that young girls are really struggling with. And I'm just trying to make a difference. And
representation.
I mean, you clearly are.
To make them norm. To make that, that is an under, utilized is not the right word, but an under represented thing is that symbols of, you're not that weird, man. Like, what we said at the beginning of the pushing through, it's like, you got pushed through. So both of those on top of it is like, you, there is a person doing the thing that you want to do that's at least like, oh, okay, I'm not crazy for trying to want to do this. And if you don't give them that viewpoint, how are they ever going to know that?
Yeah.
But
I'm glad that you said it the way you said it, though, too, Berg, is because I, in this last couple of weeks, really, like, I feel like I've always felt this way. But since The Last Dance came out, I've been shouting it as much as I possibly can.
Michael Jordan's a bitch.
No, but just that I don't think that the way Michael Jordan won, I don't think is healthy. And I don't and I think that we also have internalized that as being the only way to be successful is to be this like crazy, go like no, like blinders on, whatever it takes to win. Like, I was thinking about this today when I was in the outfield playing softball. Do you believe that if Michael Jordan could have another ring, but his son would have to like break his leg? Clean break. Just, it'll heal in 6 months.
He would do it
and
no
hesitation. He would do it, right? And I'm saying like that is, I don't consider that healthy behavior. Mm-mm. But the world has been conditioned to think that this is the way winning happens.
Right.
And when you tell me a story about an Olympian, it's like, yeah, working out is tough for me. It makes her success no less successful.
Exactly.
It's just a different way.
Exactly. Hey, and I got talked so much shit about in Italy because I didn't really party that hard in college. I was kind of a late bloomer. And
that's why we get along.
That's this table.
And, you know, I probably towards my senior year or whatever, you know what I mean? But I was a late bloomer in that aspect of things. And then once I got overseas, I went hard in the paint. And I got known as like the American that parties hard, because initially there was only a few of us volleyball girls. So we'd hang out with the basketball guys or the other athletes and this and that. But I would show up to practice every day and I would practice hard and I would show up to the games and play hard. And I wouldn't have been as good if I stayed at home by myself overseas doing whatever I did during my off time and then go to practice and feel like, who knows what I felt like. So that was my way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which the Italians did not like that way.
Probably
let me
bit
tell you.
Like patriarchal too, that they would, you know, it's expected that all the men in every country go out and go hard.
Right.
In Korea, like the women's volleyball, there's like national team level volleyball players playing in Korea. And they're like
good.
Basically like, don't go out.
Yeah.
Like, they're not like allowed out.
But that's honestly the same thing of even in college sports, to be honest. Not as much. Let's say just take volleyball men and volleyball women. Volleyball women have always been treated like kids. We got to wear the same thing when we travel. We got to be in here at this certain time. You guys all have to eat together. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. We would see the men's volleyball team and they're just loose and having a great time, this and that. And that continued professionally. You get on the bus, everything, you got to wear the same thing. You all have to be at breakfast, this and that. Like, we're in our, like, late 20s being told how to operate when everybody's different. Someone might need 30 more minutes and not actually need breakfast or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So I really thank Hugh McCutcheon in my third Olympics. He came from the men's game and he actually treated us like guys, which is, you know, weird to say, but in the gym, three and a half hours, work hard, out, go and do whatever you guys do in your normal life.
Just be ready to go the next time we're in the gym.
We're professionals. Yeah. So
this is your job.
It's very interesting, but I didn't have a bad rap, but I kept getting jobs.
That's the moral of the story, folks.
At the end of the day.
She got paid. She don't even like this shit no more. It's easy.
This shit is light work. Checks. Who caught them checks, boy?
We're going to wrap this up.
Sorry,
we can keep going. It's like, man, like I try to... I don't want people to be 4 hours later like, man, this guy's just still talking.
We can do it. We can do a part two one day.
Where can people find you on your social medias?
So my personal Instagram is Napella, my middle name. N is in Nancy. A, P is in Pat. ELA. And then my project is The Cuore Project. CUORE. It's online, cuoreproject.com, on the gram. YouTube, if you're into women's sports, it's pretty special. Doesn't even have to be volleyball players. To be honest, I would love the platform to end up being all women's sports, have an ambassador from each sport. Like, I'm the volleyball ambassador and make it happen. I think women's soccer was able to make quite a fuss with World Cup and they're, you know, making a statement for what they believe in. And they have Nike as their sponsor, so there's a lot of marketing dollars behind that, which volleyball doesn't have. But, you know, there's ways to do it now with the whole digital world without being in mainstream media. And so that's why I tried to take advantage of it in this way. I thought it could be possible finally without having huge sponsors in the volleyball world to do it without mainstream media. So that's where you can find me.
Dope. Is there anything like coming up right away that people should keep an eye on? Or just the project in general?
Yeah, I've just been working hard on the project since a lot of people have been at home. So I've been doing a lot of panels and collaborating with people and trying to bring the national team members on and talk about things. I am always open to do anything. I love podcasts. I love collaborations. I love speaking about my journey and my passions and being brutally honest about it, that it hasn't been all fun and games and there's been struggle. Yet I also know that I'm very blessed and have had a great life at the same time. And nothing huge coming up, to be honest. I've promised myself and the people out there that do follow the Corday Project to be consistent. And I have a video once a week and I have those posts, you know, four to five times a week. And my next series is going to be top high school players. I'm getting them to interview their favorite national team player in hopes that the high school players following, as in, you know, the young girls that are around them, their peers will be like, oh, she's following the Corday Project. We need to be on that as well. That's my next thing. And I'm open to it all, to be honest. I think there's a lot of creative people around me and a lot of smart people around me. It's kind of a niche thing that I'm doing because it's really for the volleyball community. But
it's a big community.
Hey. Yeah.
Those of you who don't understand volleyball, who've listened to this whole thing, understand that it's a very big community. Your daughters will probably play it at some point.
Facts.
You're going to spend a lot of money on that shit.
Also facts.
Not as much as hockey, though. Looking for funding, sponsors, funding to keep this project going. It is not cheap in the way I want to do it. Obviously, could keep it going without it being the level of I want it. But I've committed to go through the Olympics with it, whether I get other funding or not. But to continue it after that with only my own funding, it'd probably be stupid, and every financial advisor of mine would say, what the fuck are you doing?
Financial advisors ain't got shit on what's in your heart, cuz. Right. What's in your heart, cuz. Right.
So, yeah.
Chris, where can they find you on social media?
At Dreddins on Instagram. Only one I got. Which is funny, because I write, so I'm not on Twitter. But what about you, Sarah?
That's strange. You write, and I'm not on Twitter. I've got Twitter, but I'm not on it.
He doesn't like the peanut gallery chiming in on his writing.
I don't care, bro.
Can't you stop the comments or something?
Fam. No, because then I'll be scared. So I'd rather just not have it.
You can find me on Twitter at Boomtho, B-O-O-M-T-H-O. Instagram, Zerion. I also use my middle name, Zsorryon.
There we go.
And we're out. Thanks, Lindsay. We're definitely going to do this again.
Let's
do there's,
it.
There's so many more things we could talk
true,
about.
True, because I didn't ask enough. You what's your favorite Hawaiian movie out of a list of Hawaiian movies that I pulled up.
It's clearly Hawaii 5-0 the movie. Don't know if that's real.
That's not.
Right.
That's not.
Next time when I go and look at a home.
Hot off the press from Maybelline, New York, it's new Lifter Plump, an intense plumping lip gloss formulated with chili pepper to deliver a heated sensation for an instant plumping effect that lasts. From 8 sizzling shades like Blush Blaze, Red Flag, Hot Honey, Cocoa Zing, and more. An extra large wand applicator transforms lips in one swipe. Learn more at Maybelline.com. For a limited time, get 10% off your Lifter Plump purchase on Amazon with code 10PLUMP.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.